Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome.
Yet suffice it to say that various practitioners of psychology continue to hand down this bias against the natural body, encouraging women to turn their attentions to a constant monitoring of body, thereby robbing them of deeper and finer relationships with their given form. Angst about the body robs a woman in some large share of her creative life and her attention to other things. This encouragement to begin trying to carve her body is remarkably similar to the carving, burning, peeling off layers, stripping down to the bones, the flesh of the earth itself. Where there is a wound on the psyches and the bodies of women, there is a corresponding wound at the same site in the culture itself, and finally on nature itself. In a true holistic psychology, all worlds are understood as interdependent, not as separate entities. It is not amazing that in our culture, there is an issue about carving up a woman's natural body, that there is a corresponding issue about carving up the landscape, and yet another about carving up the culture into fashionable parts as well. Although a woman may not be able to stop the dissection of culture and land overnight, she can stop doing so to her own body. The wild nature would never advocate the torture of the body, culture, or land. The wild nature would never agree to flog the form in order to prove worth, prove control, prove character, be more visually pleasing, and more financially valuable. A woman cannot make the culture more aware by saying change, but she can change her own attitude toward herself, thereby causing devaluing projections to glance off. She does this by taking back her body, by not forsaking the joy of her natural body, by not purchasing the popular illusion that happiness is only bestowed on those of a certain configuration or age, by not waiting or holding back to do anything, and by taking back her real life and living it full bore, all stops out. This dynamic, self-acceptance, and self-esteem are what begins to change attitude in the culture.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's happening. So you saw, I just tap into the energy I pick.
Yeah.
It's always a perfect selection. So welcome back to Come to the Brink with Zoe Flowers. I am Zoe Flowers. And today's episode explores how the past shapes us and how trauma can transform us and how powerful purpose can emerge from even our most painful experiences. My guest today, Ashley, has navigated a deep and challenging path. 17 years as a domestic violence survivor and emerged with clarity, resilience, and a profound calling to support others. Ashley is now the CEO and program director of Rescue Her 33, a powerful organization providing essential support and community to domestic violence survivors in San Bernardino County, California. But before we dive into her powerful mission, we're going to start softly, getting to know who Ashley was before and how she became the person she is today. So, Ashley, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you. It's such an honor.
Yes. And again, just what a great reading, talking about returning to yourself and taking back your own life. And that feels like that is a journey that you are absolutely on. So, yeah, tell us a little bit about yourself, about your childhood, where you grew up, all that good stuff.
Perfect. Hi, everyone. My name is Ashley Green. And I am a 17-year survivor of domestic violence, and a little bit about my background. Trauma has always been there, dealing with a mother. Going a little flip side, I am a mother of 6 beautiful children, and I am also a foster mother of 2 wonderful little babies, and that is my life. But going back into the past, I always dealt with trauma. My mother was a product of mental illness. And even still to this day, she deals with mental illness. And I did not understand that it was mental illness while growing up. So what I experienced in my traumatized home was the physical, the mental, the emotional, the spiritual, all the cycles of abuse that we go through with spouses. My father was not inside of the home. I want to say he was a part-time parent because of the differences between him and my mother. And so that caused him to be out of the home for many years. My father dealt with alcoholism, ultimately in 2014, committing suicide. So I dealt with trauma throughout my entire life. My domestic violence started as a teen.
Oh, we're not getting to that yet.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to launch it. Slow train.
Got it. Like, okay.
Do you remember what you were interested in as a little girl?
Believe it or not, I was always interested in being a mother. I would carry a baby doll. I would always think about what it would be like being a mother, being a wife at a very young age. Everyone in my family knew Ashley was going to be the one with a lot of children because I always would have somebody's baby on my hip while other kids were playing. I was trying to finesse somebody's baby. And ultimately, I ended up being the one in the family with a lot of kids.
Yeah. So that was something that you naturally gravitated towards. Were there any other sort of significant influences on you as you were growing up?
Believe it or not, no, my life was a little bit different. My mother shielded us. So I didn't know my purpose until I got older and realized who I really wanted to be, what I really wanted to do. Because I didn't get out to explore nothing to say, I wanted to be a teacher. I didn't like school. So I knew I wanted to be a teacher. I really didn't have a purpose at the time to figure out then.
And so when do you think, as you're moving towards thinking about your purpose, how did your life begin to take shape? So you were in your mother's home, she's dealing with mental health issues. And as you grew up, how did your life begin to take shape?
So it began to take shape at a very young age. I became a mother at a very young age, and navigating through parenting at a young age, I, again, felt that was natural for me. It wasn't a scary process or anything for me because I knew that being a mother was something I wanted to do, even within my jobs. I worked at childcare centers, after school programs. Yeah, because I just always wanted to be around kids. Kids were like my therapeutic sessions, if I could say. So, yeah, but as I got older, I'm talking about in my adulthood is when I finally sat and talked to God and asked him, what is my purpose on earth?
Got it.
And so he just showed me prophetically through things.
Got it. Without sharing anything, because I like to just make sure that people feel safe in what they're sharing. Can you tell us about how you met the person who would choose violence? So I will say, disclaimer for you, Ashley, because we don't know each other. And also for people who don't know me on the podcast. People who know me know I've been doing domestic violence for 25 years now. And so I'm all about changing language. And so that's about how the field is changing and how the language around domestic violence is changing. And so I will not refer to I will refer to your partner, your ex-partner, as the person who chose to use harm, not an abuser, because we like to talk about the action and not label the person. And also just to further drive home the fact that it's was a choice. So how did you meet the person who chose to inflict harm upon you?
Yes, I was 15 years old. when I met this person. And how that happened was my mother decided she wanted a change, not taking in consideration how her teenage children would feel at that time. She decided she wanted to move to Texas for crazy reasons. And me and my sister was just not for it at all. And we were unable to voice, but I think my aunt knew that we didn't want to go. So anyways, my aunts ended up agreeing with my mom to take temporary custody of us. And so we were all excited because in our minds, we knew freedom was coming. My mom shielded us to where we could not look out the blinds. We couldn't go to parties. We couldn't go to football games. So we were ignorant to the world, basically. Yeah. And so once we figured out we were going to go stay with our aunt for a while, we were excited. And this is where I happened to meet my ex-partner, because his family lived directly across the street from my family. And what's crazy is I did not like this person whatsoever because, for one, we were on the opposite sides of the streets. They were on the east side. I was on the west side. And so I grew up in Inglewood. And yeah, Inglewood, California. And so I was like, what? I don't like this. But anyways, how he met me was I was sitting on the stairs, crowded around kids, passing them out candy.
No.
The new kid on the block. He was the new kid on the block. And so I literally just remember all these girls chasing him, like running after him because he was light skinned. It's so crazy. And I remembered all these girls wanted him, but he pointed me out. And so my sister had begun to tell me, like, oh, he wants to talk to you. Again, I had no interest in him. And so I just remembered days going by. And he just started, like, asking about me more. And so I just remember my sister telling me, like, you need to just go talk to him. So anyways, I ended up just giving him a chance of conversation. And again, I was 15 years old. So
how old was he?
So we're only 2 months apart. So he's 15.
Okay, so you're both 15. Okay.
Yep. And so about maybe 2-3 months go by, I exchanged my phone number with him. And so I began to exchange my phone number. And then we were just talking. But because I came from what was broken and it came from loneliness and whatnot, it felt safe at the time. So months go by.
Hang on 1 second. What felt safe?
What felt safe was what felt freedom and safe, because I was able to talk to somebody else. I was able to just walk out the door and to say, hey, auntie, I'll be outside on the porch or whatnot. I didn't have to feel fear. There was no fear. And so being able to just talk to this person every day, I'm opening up to this person now. And again, only 15 years old.
And did anybody in your family know what was going on inside your household?
Oh, for sure. This is the reason why my aunt wanted to take us out of that environment. At the time, because my mom would do certain things. And of course, they wanted to keep it away from us. They know how my mom was in and out of mental hospitals at a very young age of her life.
Got it.
Yeah. And then, of course, my mom was also a product of domestic violence, too, from my father. So it was a cycle that I was unaware of. Yeah. And after that, me and this guy, here's the thing. My aunt and them, they didn't notice anything because they just thought it was cute.
Oh, hey, you're 15.
Yeah, Anthony has a friend, whatnot. Up until my mom decided she wanted to come back. So that happened in, I want to say, June. In September, my mom decided she wanted to come back. I wasn't having it. I was exposed to a lot of freedom at that time. And mom ended up coming back. I ended up running away. I was a runaway for 3 years. So I ended up running away, which is crazy because I ran away across the street. And yeah, I ended up running.
At his house.
His house. Uh-huh. And because his family's very lenient, very dysfunctional, like it was more doing whatever. And so I ended up running away over there. And then altercation happened between him and somebody else, a friend or something. And we ended up moving from over there to his sister's house. And so we were just secluded from there. While all that was going on, I find out I'm pregnant. So I find out I'm pregnant at 16 years old. And so for about 9 months, we were in love. Nothing could separate us. Nothing could stop us. We were just in love. And because he was the youngest boy in a family, he had older sisters. They all catered to him. Mom and sisters just all catered to him. So they were super excited for me. My family forced me or wanted to force me to get an abortion. And because I felt like my dreams were coming true, being a 16-year-old woman pregnant, I was excited. And I was like, I'm not getting rid of my baby. And that's what happened. I ended up getting over there. 9 months went by, and then it switched.
After the first child?
I was pregnant with her. So I was about 7 months pregnant with her is when I experienced my first DV case. Yeah.
Which, again, folks, is not uncommon. Domestic violence will typically increase during pregnancy or when the person is trying to leave.
Yep.
I'll just be doing these little probably just to fill in the gaps for people who don't know. But yes, very common.
At the time, I didn't know nothing about domestic violence. I didn't know any of domestic violence. And the last thing I wanted to do was tell anybody because I didn't want to have to go back to family. Not only didn't want to go back to family, they weren't going to let me back. It was an embarrassment. And then I'm pregnant. So it was almost like, you don't want to break your little family up. So I ended up staying in a situation and how I found out that I was in a domestic violence situation. I was sitting on our apartment stairs. So his mom lived upstairs because she ended up moving from where she was into the same apartments that the sister was staying in. And so we lived upstairs, sister lived downstairs. I'm sitting on the stairs and I'm planning my baby shower. And the neighbors that stayed over in the apartments, same apartments just right next door, there were quite a bit of young men coming out of the apartment. And they're walking down the stairs. They're speaking. Not a big deal. My ex-partner was standing through the door and he notices a lot of these different young boys are coming out and then they're all speaking to me. So he waited till they all went out the gate and then he accuses me of trying to talk to one of the guys. Mm-hmm. So as I get up to try to come back in the house because I'm scared he's going to cause a big altercation, I come up, he kicks me in my stomach and I fly down the stairs. So now I'm just nervous. I'm scared because now you just kicked me in my stomach with my baby. And at the time, I make a big deal because I didn't want his mom or sisters or nobody getting involved. And so I come in the house. I'm trying to explain myself. And then I felt like from that point, because I did not say nothing, I was whispering, trying to get him to understand like, hey, I wasn't talking to them or doing X, Y, and Z. That's when it became a frequent thing. And because he knew my biggest fear was going back to my family, he would really try to control that, threatening me to put me out and whatnot. And so I was doing a lot of kissing, but just to keep it a secret.
Yeah. And so that was the beginning. You were with him for 17 years, is that right? Or
yes.
Off and on?
Nope, nothing was never off and on. We lived together from that point all the way up into my divorce.
Okay.
And so I had my first child at 16.
Okay.
I had my second child at 18. At 18 is when I experienced the worst, the most traumatic of my domestic violence. I found out that I was pregnant with my second child in the ER. I had to take a trip to the ER because he had beat me up in my sleep. And he had broke my nose in two places, and then he fractured my ribs. And mind you, I'm 18 years old. This is on Mother's Day, and it was very traumatic. And so I go to the hospital. Doctors, hey, we got some good news, got some bad news. And I'm like, okay, good news is you're 7 weeks pregnant. Happy Mother's Day. But the bad news is you have some fractured ribs and a broken nose. That's not good. And so at this time now, I have one child. I had an abortion in between there. And then now I'm 18 pregnant with my second child. Okay. He literally counted who I just totally damaged me at that point. This is where the demonic spirits got into my womb with my son. He was not there at birth. He did not help me throughout my pregnancy, but my son was my easiest birth. My easiest pregnancy, but I was so broken. I went through so much depression. This is where I really knew what depression really was.
I'm curious if the doctors, if anyone intervened. You show up, you're visibly wounded, broken bones.
Lied. So I covered for him. I told the police, so here's the thing. The incident happened at 4 o'clock in the morning. Of course, his mom is telling me, if you call the police, he's going to go to jail. So I waited hours. It looked like a bloody murder. I waited hours because I wanted it to get at a certain time so the story could make sense. And at the time, I had a great best friend and basically lied and said we were jumped at a party. And so this is the story we told. He sat at the hospital with me to make the story. And that's how everything got thrown under the rug.
So by this point, his family knows that he is actively choosing to use violence and has not tried to assist you.
No. Mom, I've never seen his mom go through physical domestic violence. Sisters went through domestic violence. So it was all a norm. We've watched it happen. And then he ended up being a product of it as well.
What do you think about that?
It's important for people to really understand generational curses. And I think that's what happened was they seen a lot. They was exposed to a lot. They lived in poverty all their lives. And so this is what they were used to. This is what the norm was. And so him being around it, and then because there was no consequences behind him, he just continued to do it. Not knowing that he was dealing with mental illness that was just undiagnosed. And I was getting the backlash of it.
He also had undiagnosed mental illness.
Yes. And now it grew and manifested after I divorced him.
I see.
And he was also a product of alcoholism and abusing pills and whatnot. And so as he got older, that increased. And then the DV.
And the frequency increased and the violence.
For sure.
Those things increased as well.
Everything increased. Yeah. And so that was at 18 years old. Yeah. And from there, it was. The cycle was, 16-year-old daughter, abortion. 18-year-old son, abortion. And then now I'm 20 years old with my third child. And I just knew that we were going to be okay at third child because the DV, in a sense, I'll say this, I don't remember as much with it with my third child. I know that there was some stuff, but I don't know. Maybe it decreased at that time. I don't remember as much with the third child. I remembered us moving into our first apartment that he never slept in. He was always at mom's house. So I felt like I was a single parent, but still together. So we moved into our first place. That only lasted for a little bit. We ended up going back to his mom's house. Now I am 21 with three children, okay? So it was very hard. Now I felt trapped because I couldn't get a job. I was so limited with everything. I didn't have a vehicle at the time. I don't think I had a vehicle at the time. I was just relying on them. So now relying on them,
yeah,
it's even harder to try to
absolutely
and move out. I had no friends. I had no family. All I knew was them. So then I was 20 years old. 22, we end up getting married. Getting married with all the wrong reasons. Now, there was an incident that happened where some cheating went on and I was the one that cheated. And it just went haywire from that. He cheated on me our whole relationship. Yeah. But then one time that I cheated, and I want to make this very clear, I was not married at the time that I did cheat on him, but it became it was like a rival or whatnot. And so that was the reason why he married me. He felt that if he married me, it would all go away and we would be okay.
Oh.
Work. Yeah, that didn't work. So we ended up getting married. That was a disaster. And then from there, we had our fourth child. And then just fast forward a little bit. So from there, fourth, and then shortly, maybe about 5 years later, we had our twins who are 9 years old now. But the gag with that is my twins were made from sexual abuse from him.
Of course.
Yeah.
Again, so, very common. Sexual abuse goes hand in hand with domestic violence. That is not uncommon at all.
Yeah. So here I was with six kids, and DV was just spiraling. And I was so used to it. The hits didn't hurt anymore. At the time, the words didn't hurt anymore. I was used to being the independent one, and I was tired. My soul was tired, but I didn't have an outlet. And so I just remembered my babies being, they weren't even 1 year old yet. And I think that's where my eyes opened. And that's when God says, you do have a purpose. And so you think about it. My twins just made nine. They were, so 8 years ago is when I figured out my purpose.
And how old were you at that point?
I was about 30.
Okay. So you were with him from 15 to 30.
33.
Oh, longer. 33. Magic number, 33.
Yeah. So, no, 32. Mm. 33 is when when everything was final, the divorce, everything. And that's when I really felt like I survived. So, and it took me.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I said that's where it took me to realize that I survived at 33 years old.
What was that moment? Because I remember so vividly, like, the day that I left my partner. I remember it like so clearly. What was that day like that you made the decision? What were you doing?
That part gets me. Every time I tell the story, I cry because that. So my oldest daughter at the time, I was, okay, so God told me that what my purpose was. And he told me that I'm going to help you create your exit plan. And that's what he did. So I landed a good job, and I was working at a group home with foster youth, again, surrounded with kids. And I got there, and it was just great. Literally to this day, the best job that I've ever had. That's when I felt even more safer. I felt like I had community.
Finally.
But a lot of people didn't know.
Because you were secluded, and people really need to understand that. You literally had no one, and you went from being secluded in your mother's house from, what, 1 to 15, pretty much?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A couple months of freedom, in quotation marks, and then here you are again, secluded.
Yeah. Yes. And even in all those seclusions, there was so much dysfunction that was around. So you would think I would have ended up being a product to what was going on because of just what I was so used to. But at that moment, that's when I started working there. And at that time, it was $13 an hour, but that was so much more than what I had ever made.
Yeah.
And so I just remember that was like June of 2018. And then March of 2019. No, we're still in 2018. I ended up getting a good vehicle. So I ended up getting a nice truck. So I said, okay, each one of my kids will have space. So I'm like, okay, I got a car. I got a job. And at the time, his mom was living with me as well. And so I slowly started not giving her the option to help me with any bills or nothing. I wanted to be able to pay everything on my own. And so I knew that once I divorced, it was going to be nasty. So I immediately just started documentations and me not spazzing out and acting out or whatnot. Because at this point, my kids are in general neglect, failure to protect from domestic violence.
So the word by now, the word of domestic violence is now in your life. It's not like it's just his family knows what's going on.
So domestic violence was in my life at 18.
Yeah, but publicly now, it's like now you have a word for it.
So yes, publicly with his family and their friends and all of them, not my family. Okay. Not my, no. As I get older or whatnot. So anyways, I'm really going through domestic violence now because I'm going up here and he's still down there.
Yeah.
He knows that in any given moment, I will leave.
Yes.
So that's when the DV started increasing. That's when the threats started increasing. I was just going through it. But I still had to maintain because the biggest fear that I had was Children Family Services coming to take my kids.
Yeah.
And that moment that I realized it. So a week before this, he was just damaging my house, causing chaos. Anything you think of, he was doing it. Mind you, I was a foster mother at that time. And luckily, I was a foster mother to one of his family members. So I was coming in and out of my house, and I'm working for Children Family Service. So I'm like, all I need is for the police to continue to pop up in my house. They see that my house is deemed as a fostered home, and then I lose all of my kids. So at that point, I was mentally broken and mentally tired. But I remember my ex-husband had did something the night before. Probably bust all the walls or something. I can't really remember. But the next day, my oldest daughter, my mom was there visiting and she was sitting on the couch and my daughter was sitting on the couch as if they were already talking about the situation. So I was coming in from somewhere, I'm not sure. And my daughter told me that she needed to talk to me. Mind you, he was in the room. I want to say he might have been asleep. Maybe the kids were at school or something, but my oldest daughter was there. And reason being that my oldest daughter was there is because he wouldn't watch the kids while I went to work. And so my daughter decided that I'll go to homeschool where she would be able to go 2 days out of the week. And then we don't have to work. We were trying to minimize him for everything. And she was there and I just remembered her crying. And I remembered her exact words telling me that every day you go to this group home and you help these boys with their trauma, not realizing that your own kids are dealing with trauma. And she just told me that I can't take it no more. We can't sleep. We are scared and we don't want to go into foster care and lose you. That did it. That did it. And
how old was she at that time?
15. She was 15.
Wow.
And I just remember crying. And I just remember telling her and my mom, I'll be back. Those are my exact words. I'll be back. I grabbed my purse. I got in my car and I cried and cried and I prayed. I don't think I've ever prayed that hard. And I cried and I went over to the courthouse over in San Bernardino. And I just remember sitting in my car before I went in and I said, God, if you fight this battle for me, my exact words, God, if you fight this battle for me, I promise to never look back. I promise to never get back in that domestic violence situation again. And God's words to me was, you are going to go through one of the worst battles there is, but I'm letting you know you're not doing it alone. And I just remembered a calm, like a relief off of me. And I walked in that courtroom and I went to document control and I said, I want to file my divorce. And I asked for the domestic violence papers. I asked for restraining order. I take that back. We already had a restraining order against us because he already had about 4 or 5 domestic violences on him. And it was the worst battle of my life. He beat me up on Facebook Live right before we were going for our mediation. They called CPS on me. So CPS popped up in my house. Luckily, I had everything and documents. The documentation is important because
I'm wondering, so when did you get to the point where you knew about documentation?
Believe it or not, I did not know about documentation. But when I tell you, Zoe, the spirit of the Lord was with me. He was giving me gem after gem. And I just remembered having this big white folder. And I remembered having my restraining order. I remembered having my company mediation papers. I remember just having my court papers that I filed for the divorce. I just had all those papers in a folder. Mm-hmm. And so I received the knock at the door from CPS with all these false allegations. I didn't get scared because I just remembered God saying, I'm going to fight your battle. So I let him come in. I knew what they were going to check for. And I remembered this lady telling me, do you have any documentation to show that, you know, this is what you have and this is... I handed her that folder. She looked through the folder. She took those pictures. She talked to my kids. She checked my house. She said, I'm going to close this out because I don't claim for these allegations to be cool, to be true.
Somebody was making false CPS.
His sisters and whatnot. Yes. So what my biggest fear was of my children being taken from me, I didn't want him to have joint custody, nothing. Mind you, he was an alcoholic. He didn't have a driver's license. He didn't have a job. He didn't have a car. He was a felon. He didn't have anything. So when it was time for custody mediation, oh, he was threatened he was going to take my kids and he was going to do this because remembered, kids was my therapeutic.
Yeah.
So if I lost my kids, I wouldn't be sitting in this chair today. And so when I go, I'm letting my emotions get the best of me. Now, if he shows up in court, oh, he's threatening, he's going to do this, he's going to do that. And now I'm trying not to let him get the best of me. This lady must have had angels surrounded all over her. And I remembered before us going into the mediation thing, I remembered her telling me, you don't get out of character. God is with you. You don't say a cuss word. Don't yell. She said, God has already taken care of your situation. Literally, this lady told me. After that, I sat in that chair and waited for my name to be called. And when it was time for us to go into the mediation thing, oh, he bashed me and she leave the kids at home by themselves. And she did this and then she did this. So the mediation lady, she says, where are you at? You don't have a job. You know, you're there. And she says, how old are your children? So at the time, the older three were old enough to watch the younger three.
Right.
And she said, as long as there's some contact information, the police live on there, the firefighter, the poison control, they're the phone in the home, there's food in the house, they can watch the younger siblings. Right there, I didn't care what happened after that because I was working. I had everything that I needed to show, but he still wanted to fight me. He didn't sign no papers. He didn't do anything. He wanted to keep the marriage together. And so what happened was we went in for court. And so the judge was getting ready to rule on something. I don't remember, but I remember telling the judge, he's still in my home while I'm going through this domestic violence situation. He won't leave. Can you say something? And so that's when the court ordered him, gave him 3 weeks to be out of the home. But that's when the worst of the worst. Gave him 3 weeks to be out of the home.
After this long history.
Yes. Yes. And he told me, so after that, I found myself getting into a rebound relationship. And again, it's because I wanted to feel safe. I wanted to feel like I was out of this. So I ended up getting into this rebound relationship. Something happened where he had to go back home to his family for a while. And he was gone for about 5 months. Ex-spouse found out about that. His exact words were, every day that you're not here to save her, I'm going to beat her bleep. He lived up to every word he said. The police was called to my house so many times. The police knew who it was. They knew where. But again, God said I was going to fight your battles. CPS never got involved. I didn't lose my job. He showed up to my job. There was so much that he had done till... And then every time he went to jail, he would just get back out. You know why? Because I was still having empathy for him. After all he was doing for me, I wasn't pressing charges. I just wanted him to leave me alone. And again, God came through. I found a place that I thought he did not know. Found a place and was able to escape at 2 a.m. with my children. Left everything. We were able to just grab what we could and we left. We thought we were safe for about 2 months till we found out he was stalking my apartment. And there go the fear again. Yep. So it was crazy. It's a long journey after that too, but it was insane.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that, first of all.
Absolutely.
What do you wish you had known back then?
What I wish I had back then.
Yes.
Wish that I had a two-parent household, that I had a mother to allow me to make mistakes or to allow me to open up to share certain things with her. I wish that I had a mentally balanced father that would give me the red flags of a man. I wish that I had uncles that was there to fight my battles. I wish I had guidance. I didn't have guidance at the time.
Say this, no matter what, you can come home, blah, 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 blah. But
I didn't.
Thing.
I wish I had that. And then what I wish I'd known with that, then love does not hurt. That I did not have to go through that. I should have opened up. I should have spoken. I should have got the help that I needed and then my children had needed. So because of that, now my children are a product of trauma. Now the brokenness had still occurred because now they were in a broken home for so long. And so now I'm trying to pick up the pieces of what I know now. My kids are still dealing.
I want to push back on the should. You should have done this. You should have done that. Because how would you have known?
Exactly. Exactly. And I always dealt with the fear of what would happen when I leave. How could I leave?
Where'd you go?
Where would I go? And so this is why it took a long time for my exit plan to take place. And you imagine if my exit plan slipped up, they're already exposed to what I would have
done,
or they would know my plan B. I don't think I could have done anything different.
Absolutely.
But to stay in it at the time and deal with it. It was rust. It was rust.
Yeah. How do you think your understanding of domestic violence has changed over time? Because I told you first conversation what I thought when I first left versus once I got into the field and I started like reading books and like being, people have been talking about this for hundreds of years. Like, there's an actual movement.
Yeah.
I thought that it was like, oh, I could help him. Oh, I just loved him enough. Oh, those were some of the things I thought that about domestic violence. I didn't even use the words domestic violence.
I was
an angry man is what I thought.
Yeah. The thing for me is I was always thinking I was opposite of everybody else. I was always thinking like I was in domestic violence from the physical, not knowing that the domestic violence was the mental, was the emotional, was the spiritual, was the sexual, was all of those different abuses. So the understanding of it was, I'm thinking it was just the domestic violence. So now unlearning that, now I feel my mental, now I have my emotional, because a lot of people say, oh, words don't hurt. You can get over. Those words still stick to me to this day.
Yeah.
And I mean, and so trying to heal yourself from that.
Yeah.
That's knowing that part of my life will always be a part of my life and it will never fully recover or heal. Within itself, I still think about that. Like, dang, I have to always remember this. And one of my cries and prayers is like, God, I just want to forget about it. But then God said, if I forget about it, I won't be able to help the next woman down the line. And this is where the rescuer comes into place.
Yeah, I think that the forgetting, first of all, I think the mind is phenomenal.
Yeah.
In ways that, and I actually interviewed somebody yesterday that's a survivor of a mass shooting.
Oof.
In 2021. So it's still really
very
big because she has PTSD like us.
Yeah, that's what they diagnosed me with.
Yeah, PTSD. But even with that, the brain does help to forget some things. So now, since I've got 30 years away from that relationship, there are things I just don't remember.
Got it.
So there are things that it's okay to forget.
Yeah.
I'm just driven by something else now. what I found is that a lot of people enter this movement saying, oh, I want to make sure that nobody else is going through what I've gone through. And I think that it's good in theory, but I don't think it's really realistic in the long haul. I think, yeah, just where we are societally.
It does not help when you have children with the abuser, because it's like that part of you is always still there.
Yes.
As they get older, is it a lot easier? Absolutely.
Yeah.
You, like, his name still rings. His name still surfaces. He's still around. So it's just always. And then actually, he's worse in the mental mindset than he was to me then. Because now he's experiencing the in and out of the mental hospitals. Now he's doing things that my children have to rescue him from. And I'm like, no, don't put that on my kids. I tried so hard to get them out of the situation only to be thrown back in it because of his consequences. So it's just, when is it going to end? But
because they feel compassion.
Yeah. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, I know, although he was not a good person to me, he loved the kids. The kids love him. And I don't deter him from that. I don't talk bad about my children are old enough at the now to know that he's not healthy, mm-hmm. you know, and how he is. And my kids always tell me, please don't ever go back to him. You don't need to work ever. But they still love him. And actually, as my daughter got older and who she is as God's daughter, she has forgiven him and they have grown a relationship. So I'm happy for it.
Yeah. And she's happy about it too, the relationship.
She's content with it, because still who he is. And so her thing is just not having hate in her heart and holding him accountable for what the past was. But they keep their relationship with boundaries. Yeah.
Excellent. So how did you move from survivor to advocate to founder of Rescue Her 33?
Moving from survivor was getting that paper in the mail saying that you are officially divorced. So I felt like the chains were broken at that point. I didn't have to have any fear. The attachment was gone. Believe it or not, Rescue Her is a God-ordained organization. God literally woke me up out of my sleep January 25th of 2021, I'm sorry. And he told me that this is why you went through what you went through. This is what this name is going to be called. I would have never called an organization Rescue Her 33. This is the reason why he told me the name. And I was just jotting everything down. He literally gave this to me, this prophetic dream, at 4:11 a.m. So I'm jotting everything down. And of course, with me not being a high school graduate, mother of six, never had a business mindset, didn't know anything about running a business or operating a business, God pushed me through it. And I just remembered asking God, like, how am I going to open a business and start a business? I remembered, I don't know if you remember when they were giving out all those checks around pandemic time. And with me having a whole bunch of kids, I received so many checks. God made sure I did not touch those checks. So it was around the time I had to go file my taxes. And I just remembered God telling me, ask your tax lady about doing a DBA. Now, mind you, I didn't know what a DBA was. And so I asked her, how does business, like if I wanted to open up a nonprofit, how does that work? I didn't even know anything about a nonprofit. I didn't know nothing. She began to explain everything to me, and then she asked me if I wanted to file a DBA, and I told her yes, and she said, what's the name that you want? And I said, Rescue Her 33. She said, that's an interesting name. So anyways, I did my DBA, I did my EIN, and I just remembered, like, cashing those checks, giving her all the money to open up this nonprofit. And so maybe a couple of months, 2 months back in March, I kept saying, need to run this business out of somewhere. So my esthetician was in this same building, and I remembered asking her about these buildings. And mind you, I didn't have no extra income or nothing, but I remembered her asking about this building. And she said, oh, girl, you can get in. The spaces are very cheap. So I remember them telling me that they had a lengthy wait list. It took them 2 months to opened up a space for me, and I ended up getting my space. So now I had DBA, EIN. I had already filed for my federal. I already filed for my state. Got my office space. Like, now I just got all this stuff. And then I just remembered God saying, you are going to help other women that went through the same exact thing that you went through. Don't worry about how it's going to get funded. Don't worry about the next step. You listen to me and I will order your steps. And so where we're at today is we moved office spaces into a bigger office space. And now we have services to help women, such as basic life skills. We have a 12-step trauma-informed program for our youth, for our teens, for our adults. Now we have substance, we have therapy, we have domestic violence classes. We have all of those services to help these women. We create exit programs to help these women that are still in the home with their abusers. We do mock interviews. We help them with job readiness. There's so much that I have implemented. And what I like to always tell people is Rescue Her is a 24-hour. So everything is 24-hour. A hotline, our shelter will be 24-hour. Our transitional home will be 24-hour. Our childcare will be 24-hour because everything I went through is implemented into my organization. And so I want to be able to make sure that these women get out, stay out, elevate, heal, grow, and link arms with someone else that need that assistance and that help. So I'm super, super excited about Rescue Her. I have been pushing. I have been grinding. I have been literally selling myself out here to help these women and these children. But here's the also kick about Rescue Her. We understand that men go through things as well. We understand that men are abused and not talk about it. And so what I did was 2 years ago, my father committed suicide. I created a foundation for men, and that's a Rescue Terry Foundation, and it's umbrellaed under Rescue Her. And we also help men go through their abuse, whether they say it or not. A lot of them go through mental. A lot of them are great fathers, but dealing with a bitter baby's mother. So we want to assist with that as well. And we have great programs with fatherless boys as well to help them too. So we're not all just teen women all the time. We want to be able to assist with that because we do understand and know that a father is needed in the home. It is so important to have a two-parent healthy household. And I personally believe that a boy needs his father. So how can we do that? We offer services and help to those who really need it and want it. So we have Rescue Terry Foundation too.
Okay, great. Excellent, excellent.
I want to take a moment. I always like to do a reflection point. And so I want to invite folks, if you've been listening up until now, to just go ahead and close your eyes and let your shoulders drop. Let your feet be firmly planted on the ground, taking a deep breath in through your nose, exhaling through your mouth, and maybe just reflecting back on your past, the things you've experienced. And maybe think about what parts of your past continue to shape how you show up in relationships to others, in relationships, most importantly, to ourselves. And then, and this can even be a journal prompt, what might it look like to offer yourself more compassion for yourself? What would it look like to offer ourselves more compassion? Just get to overthink first things that come to your mind. That is the answer.
Amen. Yeah.
So you can feel free to share your reflections privately with me. You can always DM me on Instagram, I am Zoe Flowers, or email me info@iamzoeflowers.com because y'all know I love your stories. And they matter so much. So thinking about the survivors that you're working with, in your role now, what do you think survivors of domestic violence most need to know now? in 2025?
Documentation is so important. And speaking up, here's what I'll say. Also, we as a community and we as organizations around have to do better with also assisting these people, because you have so many people that are in need of the help that'll speak up, that'll say something, but then they're getting referral this way, referral that way. They're not getting the help that they really need. So my thing is, I'm here to advocate for these people, but we
as survivors.
Yes, survivors. Yes. But we as organizations and a community base has to help these people, because a lot of them are not going to speak up. They're not going to say anything. But as a survivor, giving yourself grace, you don't beat yourself up on what you should have did, what could have been done. It happened. Now that's heal and grow, and it's not going to happen overnight. So giving yourself some grace is what's going to be needed. I'm a spiritual person. Getting into your word and worshiping and fasting and praying, and also building community around you is what's going to really help you through your process and surviving it like that. Like, not looking back, not. And here's my thing. I am 6 years out. I still make mistakes with getting in relationships, with feeling unloved or thinking certain things and whatnot. And so I also found myself to not be as healed as I thought that I was. And so, again, just taking that time back and remembering who I am and what I went through. And it's my story, but it's not my life anymore. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, 6 years is, you have to give yourself grace.
You even think about what the past 5 years going through COVID were like, just literally in a time warp. So yes. And for people who don't, worshiping can look like a lot of things. Worshiping can look like going out into nature. Worshiping can look like painting, right? Yeah. So for people who are not of the sort of traditional religion, there are ways for you to worship and heal. Yeah. As well, the yeah. goal is to find it.
Absolutely.
Find it. And a lot of times it's things that were already within you, things that were already accessible to you.
Everybody to find your purpose, not what someone else think of you, not what others think that you should be doing or could be doing. You find what fits you best, because when I tell you, that's when you will flourish, you will enjoy what you're doing, you will love that part about yourself. Yeah. And you have to do what's best unapologetically.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's so much more I could say, but no, I'm not going to. I'm going to around this purpose conversation, because I know there's just so many more things you could say. But we are going to come to a close, and I'm going to ask, as I ask everyone, what are you grieving at this moment? And what are you deeply grateful for today?
So what I am grieving over is, I'm actually grieving over a lot, but my heart still aches. I'm still grieving over a heartbreak. I'm still grieving over not feeling loved or wanted. But what I am grateful for today is what I have, where I'm going, where God takes me, the outcome of my children, just from me really holding them together. I have so much to be grateful for. Yeah.
Folks, I hope you've been drinking your water throughout. We have to stay hydrated. So how can people support you? How can people support Rescue Her 33?
Yes. So I do have resources. Also, definitely want to share this. If you are going through any sort of domestic violence, it does not have to be physical only. Like I said, domestic is all sorts of abuses. And I am here. You can email me at ashley@rescueher33.org. You can go to my website at www.rescueher33.org. If you want to donate, we have a GoFundMe for Rescue Her 33. We have Zelle. We have Cash App, Rescue Her 33 for our Cash App. Zelle is my phone number, 951-347-9217. And we also have our hotline that you can call me or text me if you don't want to call it, 951-347-9217. And any donation will help. Like I said, we help many people. We also have the domestic violence hotline as well. And that number is 1-800-779-7233. You can always call them as well. And yeah, again, we are 24 hours, so someone will always answer a text message or a phone call, but we are here to help you.
Absolutely. And I'm sure you will send me all that information so that I can put it in the show notes.
Okay.
And so that we'll have it. So thank you so much. This was such a great conversation. And we could just go on and on. We definitely could. But yeah, just grateful, first of all, that you made it out.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. And so
So glad that you did that. Glad that you're here. And yeah, looking forward to more, watching what you do next.
I'm here. Just let me know when I'm able to come back.
Yes, absolutely. When your book comes out.
My book will be out next week. I'm super excited. Okay.
All right.
A book about me, my story, Rescue Her 33, the year I survived. Yeah. Yes, I will give you the update on that.
Okay, sounds good.
All righty.
Okay, so next time on Come to the Brink, I'm going to be talking with Sky Aris, who courageously explores deep layers of grief. It's loneliness, it's isolation and depression, but also its hidden potential to unlock greater love, connection, and healing. So that's going to be another raw, powerful conversation that you definitely are not going to want to miss. So thank you all for joining us as new episodes drop every Tuesday at 7:11 Eastern Standard Time AM, with bonus episodes dropping on some Fridays. And you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember, no one should stay on the brink alone. I am Zoe Flowers, and I will talk with you soon.